All right. It is always my pleasure to talk to Stephen Fearing, and even more so, it's a real honor to have you down here in the studio again, sir. Thank you very much.
Pleasure to be here. You're calling me sir like Howard does.
Yeah. I did the show with Howard for a number of years, so I probably picked up a bad habit or
learned
two.
Learned the etiquette from Howard.
How are things going for you?
Very well. I'm just starting this tour officially right now, right here, which is a nice way to start it. Busy. Black in the Road to Kings is very busy.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of a nice, life has flip-flopped. I used to go out with Black in the Road to Kings as a break from my day job, and now it's the other way around. I do solo shows to get away from the Rodeo Kings. No complaints, but it's different, and I love it.
So this is just sort of a short swing for you, and then Blackie fires up again. I know you're here in March.
Yep. I'm home again February 12th, and I mean, it's a lot of work packed into a short amount of time. Then I'm home for about 2 days, and I'd fly down to Nashville and do a show with those guys. Yeah. And hopefully either pick up or at least try on our almost finished suits, which we're having
new
made
suits?
In new suits.
Oh.
It's time for new suits. The last ones, they were pretty stinky.
Yeah, I know there was some complaints about that.
We figured we could just send them out on tour on their own at this point. But yeah, there's a guy named Manuel who took over from Nudie. I don't know if you know the history behind the cowboy suits, but Nudie was the guy who first made the cowboy suits for Hank Williams and Porter Wagner and all those guys right up until the Flying Burrito Brothers.
Right.
So the crazy pot plant Graham Parsons suit was made by Nudie, and then his apprentice was Manuel. So Manuel's kind of taken the torch and is running with it, and it's pretty exciting. It's kind of like I don't know. It's like getting a handmade guitar or something.
It's quite a legacy for those suits.
Yeah, well, it's like he was saying to us, it's definitely an investment. And that's for damn sure. I mean, it could go buy a guitar with what we're going to pay for these suits. But, there's something about it. We all get off on the suit business, and especially having pretty outrageous suits.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're the editor of the entertainment section when it's festival time and you've got four pictures of guys in jeans with acoustic guitars in a cornfield, three idiots in these loud suits.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah,
is Blackie still as much fun as it used to be? I mean, I know for you it was always kind of a fun little break from your other, like you said, your day job. But is it still as much fun, or is it?
Yeah, it is, and I realize that, you know, I probably wouldn't tell you if it wasn't.
No, but I realize that.
But yeah, most definitely it is. Even more so in that it's momentum. There's a lot of momentum within the band.
Right.
So we put out a record we put out Let's Frolic in September. We have Let's Frolic again, which is being mastered pretty much as we speak.
Oh, okay.
And that'll be coming out in May. And
not until May.
Yeah, no. We're going to give the first one a little bit more of a chance to bloom. But while we're mixing Let's Frolic again down in Nashville a couple of weeks ago, we were discussing the next two, possibly three records.
Wow.
What we want to do and when and all that. So, I mean, it's a little bit mind-boggling, but there's a lot of focus from the three of us. I mean, it's a funny project. If listeners know, it's been an on-again, off-again kind of thing where we go at it for a year and then gradually drift off back to our day jobs.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that will happen again to a degree, but I don't think to the same degree. We'll see. We'll see how we feel in a year. It's exhausting, and much as we love each other after being in a van for a couple of months, it starts to get a little thin, and I start to yearn for the mid-sized rental car solo tour days.
Yeah.
But we're going over to Europe this time. We're going to be doing a TV show in Germany in March, and then a couple of shows in Germany, Holland, and then over to the UK. And we've never done that before.
Yeah.
And so things are just rolling along in a really interesting way. And strictly from my own perspective as a solo artist, I realize that there's more of a perception these days that I'm a part of a band who puts out solo records as opposed to the other way around.
Oh, yeah.
And it's starting to feel a little bit like that, too.
Yeah.
In that we're really, we're tight.
But that's okay with you. I mean, you worked so hard to build the great solo career. I mean, Blackie doesn't sort of take away from that, does it?
No, it doesn't. It really one feeds off the other.
Right.
I'll never stop doing this, you know, not at all.
We won't let you.
What I've come to realize is that I don't really care. I mean, I do care, because right now I get to do all of it. So if I was only doing one thing, I'd probably miss the other a lot.
Right.
But in some ways, it doesn't really matter to me what I'm doing, as long as I've got a guitar in my hands and I'm having a good time, you know. It's all sort of from the same creative wellspring, if you will. It feels very creative to me. I'm learning constantly when I'm working with Blackie, almost more so than I do on my own. I'm very familiar with all of the routine of doing the solo thing, whereas with Blackie, it's always, you know, just kind of flying along by the seat of your pants.
Yeah.
There's a lot of new material coming all the time, and that's pretty interesting. We did a, to sort of illustrate that, we did a thing called We Shall Be Released.
Yeah, I know. I heard that on CBC. That was amazing.
I mean, I don't know. It was two nights celebration of the last waltz.
Yeah.
Not trying to recreate it, but sort of honor it with a whole bunch of guests singing most of the material from that show.
Yeah.
And occasionally picking another song by an artist from the same era by, let's say, instead of doing the Joni Mitchell tune, which I think was from Hejira, what the hell's his name? Tony Decker from Great Lake Swimmers.
Right.
He sang Case of You. So there was a little bit of substitution, but the amount of material that we had to learn, that I had to learn, because Colin knew it, it was astounding. And those band songs aren't easy. So there was a real sense of, you know, knuckle down and learn this stuff. And we rehearsed a lot to try and get the harmonies right.
Yeah.
And that taught us a whole bunch about each other. So it's there's always stuff like that. There's always a sense of pushing.
Please tell me there's a DVD coming of that show.
Well,
please tell me.
I don't think there'll be a DVD. There was no there were a little bit of informal camera work going on. We had we brought a guy in. It was CBC, right? Radio. So they were concentrating on recording. Fingers crossed. What we're hoping to do is to put out a recording of that, in some portion of it. You can imagine what the kind of permissions and licensing that would have to go on.
Yeah.
So we're thinking of treating it more like a Blackie project with maybe a couple of guests.
Oh, right, yeah.
And we did 24 songs, I think, each night.
Yeah.
So try and pull 10 to 12 songs that we really love that we did. But, it, you know, it was us with a 10-piece band. We had a 4-piece horn section. And again, it's playing band material.
Yeah.
So it's a different project again, but if we can put that out, you know, it might take a year, but we're going to try.
All this work with Blackie, has it sort of changed your approach to the solo records, do you think? Or is there, you know, do you have to sort of reinvent yourself as a singer-songwriter after being in the band for so long? Or
it's a really good question. And there's like two-part answer to it. It does very much affect me. I mean, how could it not to be playing music with so intensely and so closely with two really distinctive artists. So as an example, you know, I've started playing a lot more electric guitar in the band, and so I'm really paying attention to what Colin's doing, not trying to emulate him because I don't want to get in his way.
And who could, really?
Exactly. I mean, I don't play slide at all, but try to figure out something that's complementary and that fits.
Right.
And once you start playing electric guitar, it really affects the way you play acoustic guitar. Some of the masters that go back and forth, I think of Richard Thompson and Bruce Coburn.
Yeah.
Two really accomplished players in either instrument. Richard especially, when he plays, he sounds like himself on both instruments, but he plays them both quite differently.
Right.
Try to play a little less and fit in with the band and don't cover all the bottom end all the time.
Right.
So, yeah, it affects me. It really has affected my writing. And that leads into the second part of the answer, which was you were asking about reinventing myself as a singer-songwriter. And I'm actually getting really fed up of the entire singer-songwriter genre. I love writing songs, and I love performing, so it's kind of splitting hairs.
Yeah.
But there's a subtle difference. And the genre of singer-songwriter has become a bit of a closed loop.
Right.
Where singer-songwriters listen to each other, they make records that sound like each other, and I'm starting to write songs where I don't care if I sing them. Okay. And so that lets go of writing them in a certain way.
That's interesting.
And yeah. really trying to concentrate on the writing and what makes a really great song.
Yeah.
Sometimes singer-songwriter material is so personal, not necessarily in the content, but in the style of playing, that nobody else can play it.
Right.
And I'm interested in writing songs that could go out on their own, that might have nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
And then you go out and you have to do a show.
Yeah.
And how do you play those songs? And so it alters that again. So it's almost like splitting yourself in half, a bipolar folk singer. What a con. Yeah. And then performing them at that point and forgetting about the writing part and just trying to play them, you know, and really play the song and let the song be the king rather than the style or the genre yeah. or any of that stuff. So it's another kind of a subtlety. But again, working with Tom and Colin, you know, Tom is a write-aholic. I joke about having interventions where we'll come down and take away his rhyming dictionary. But both of those guys are constantly writing, not necessarily with their own projects in mind.
Okay.
And I've always written for me.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
if somebody else plays it, that's fantastic. But I'm starting to love the idea of kind of taking one hat off and putting the other one yeah. on, not wearing them all at the same time.
Interesting to notice on the new record, Yellow Jacket, you seem to have done a lot more co-writing than you've ever done before.
Yeah.
A lot of writing with Josh Finneson.
A lot of stuff with Josh. And that really plays into I'll play a couple of songs that touch on that. There's one song in particular, Love Only Knows. What I decided to do to challenge myself with this record is classic interview question 101, what comes first, lyrics or melody?
I wasn't going to go there, but
well, it's a good question because sometimes, you know, people tend to start with one thing and that's how they always write. And yeah. I've always written 99% of the time from a lyric, putting down a lyric idea and then trying to tease a song out of it. And with this record, I decided that all those little melodies that we all whistle when we're, you know, doing the dishes or humming, whatever.
Yeah.
Paying attention to them and realizing that a lot of times you're actually improvising and you're making something up.
Right.
And why am I not doing something with it since I'm supposed to be making my living from this? So sitting down with my little laptop and turning GarageBand on.
Yeah.
And la-la-la-ing a song that has no lyrics. And once you start paying attention to those melodies, they come full force. Like I would have whole songs but no lyric,
mm-hmm.
a melody, a chorus, a whole chord structure and arrangement. And it's hard to know what is a song about. You know, I've got right. a song. I don't want it to be an instrumental. It's kind of like the difference between writing an essay, you know, write what you did on your summer vacation versus anything you want. And
yeah.
people will gravitate to one or the other depending on whether they like a parameter or they don't. And I've always found it very difficult to write to a melody. So right. I challenged myself to do that. And with Josh, it was often giving him a melody and saying, what does this do for you? What do you get out of this?
Right.
Sometimes saying I'm very flexible with how the melody goes, or in the case of Love Only Knows, saying I want it to be exactly like this. The meter exactly, the length of each musical phrase exactly. I don't want to change any of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that means we're thinking about content of the lyric, but we're also really thinking about things like how many syllables are in the words and right. stuff like that. And it's quite a jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah.
So he came back from one of our writing sessions the next day, me having given him this melody, and he had the first line of the chorus. And it was such an evocative line. And it was sort of like being slapped in the face with a wet rag. It was just so obvious what this song is about. It's a love song. It couldn't be anything else. But what kind of a love song, and who's loving who or not? And
right.
and so then his experience as a father with kids who are growing up and hitting their teens and starting to, you know, I think he put it, sever the apron strings with a blunt machete. You know, you start to try to write a song from that perspective. I don't have that experience. You know, I have stepchildren, but I've never raised a child. So
right.
different experience for me. So we wrote it together. And again, it doesn't really matter to me how I get to a certain place musically, just so long as I'm feeling challenged and I'm feeling like I'm involved, you know,
yeah.
as much as I can be. So co-writing is something that it kind of falls in line with playing in the band. It's a collaborative process.
For sure. Did you want to, are we warmed up enough there, do you think?
Yeah, the guitar's gone out of tune again because it came in from the cold. I figured I'd play one flat tire just because it's a get it out of my system. Pickup trucks and reefers ganging up in the middle lane, and I'm stuck on the shoulder trying to get out of the rain. One flat tire, this river of taillights and chrome. One flat tire, another night away from home. Bernie went to hospital, he said there wasn't much pain, but I couldn't sleep at night in case he didn't wake again. One flat tire and a shaky voice on the phone. One flat tire, another night away from home. Grand design of mice and men, the rats racing in the street as the fumes of ambition fill the air. And life is that four-letter word, like love, like hate, it's salty on my tongue, like blood or tears, blood or tears, like blood or tears. When I can't be near you, I pull myself apart. When I can't get through to you, it's like a hole in my heart. One flat tire, and I'm swallowing a stone. One flat tire, another night away from home. One flat tire. One flat tire, one flat tire, another night away from home. One flat tire, one flat tire, one flat tire, another night away from home.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. We haven't mentioned yet, you're playing on Saturday at the West End Cultural
Center,
of course.
That's right.
It's been quite a while since you played there, so hopefully lots of us will go and check that out. The last time you played at the West End Cultural Center, you had a very interesting opening act. I don't know if you remember that.
Was that Alana?
No, I was thinking the Weaker Thans played a show just before you at the West End.
Is that right?
Yeah, and then you played after that.
Really? I don't remember that at all. I remember the gig where I think it was Alana Lewandowski opened the show for me.
Yeah, it could have been.
But I think the last time I played there was maybe with Andy White.
Oh, right, yeah.
That's
yeah.
what I'm thinking. Alana was on that one.
Yeah, that's right.
It all gets blurry after a while.
For sure. Yeah. Unfortunately, we're running a little short on time.
Okay.
Would you be willing to do another one, though?
Yeah. Can I tune?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you want to stop this while I tune or just run it?
No, we'll just keep running. It's you know, radio. That's the way it goes. Yeah. I don't know if you can talk and tune at the same time.
I can try.
The one question that I really love asking you all the time is, you're such a big music fan. I mean, not only are you a great singer-songwriter in your own right, but I love the way you're so passionate about music, and you're always talking about other people as well. You always turn me on to artists. Like, as soon as Stephen Fearing drops a name, I pick it up and I run with it, and you've never steered me wrong before.
That's pretty cool. Good.
So now that I've built you up, what are you listening to these days, or is there anything that...
There's a young artist who I ran across at the end of last year or so, this winter, at a little folk festival up in Barrie. Guy's name is Pat Robitaille.
Okay.
He's out of Windsor. And, you know, I don't... You must feel the same way. You get a lot of music in front of you.
Yeah, yeah.
And without being too elitist, a lot of it, I just find it really kind of depressing because a lot of it is sort of super derivative or just doesn't interest me.
Absolutely.
For one reason or another.
Yeah.
And he and I did a workshop together, and he just knocked me out because he's young and he's super confident, but he had a really distinctive voice and a really strong sense of his own thing is the only way I can put it. And he's definitely going to be coming down the pike. I would keep an eye out for him. There's a group called Dala, also out of Ontario. It's two young women who sing the most beautiful harmonies. I ran into them at Mariposa last year, and they were sound checking, doing a bunch of Joni Mitchell, and I thought, sniggeringly, oh, here we go. You know, you could just see this revival coming over the horizon.
Yeah.
Sort of beautiful young things singing harmonies with flowery dresses.
Yeah.
And then they did their set, and they did a lot of original material, but with this really strong harmony, and I loved it. They were so good.
Wow.
And their, again, really strong sense of themselves and their craft and all of that. I mean, when you run into people who are young but really confident and not just kind of all over the map confident, not just thrashing, but really strong focus, I always love it. It just knocks me out. So Dala and Pat Robitaille, there's right. my bet.
Folks, write that down.
And this was a request from Jason. And I haven't played this in ages, so... My poor secret shadow, how long have you walked, obscured in the dark of my shade? You were born right behind me, like a dog on a chain, watching all the mistakes I have made. And when one tired candle makes a cavern of my room, and the ashtray spills over on the page, you flicker above me like a swollen balloon in the wrought iron fiction of your cage. And it's a long time till morning reeking finds you in the bright golden fetters of the day, when you will walk on behind me like a dog on a chain, watching all the mistakes I have made. My poor secret shadow, you are older than me. You are old as the debts I haven't paid. And you follow me blindly like a dog on a chain, after all the mistakes I have made. It's a long time till morning reeking finds you in the bright golden fetters of the day, when you will walk on behind me like a dog on a chain, watching all the mistakes I have made. You will walk on behind me like a dog on a chain. After all the mistakes I have made.
Unbelievable. That's beautiful. And that's from Industrial Lullaby? Or what song is it? What album is that off?
I think that is off Industrial Lullaby, yeah. Oh,
that's
I don't know. Was that the song you requested? Okay, good. Good. I think it's off Industrial Lullaby. Yeah. I remember recording it. I don't remember which record it's on. So many miles is on it, yeah. Yeah, anyways, yeah, it's on the live one, too.
The vultures are circling outside the window there. All right. Unfortunately, we got to go pretty quick.
I'm at the festival this year, too.
Yeah,
I'm very excited about it.
I was going to say that. It's been a while since
been a long
solo
time.
Mode, for
yeah,
sure.
It's been a long time, and I feel like I'm plugging myself back into the Winnipeg thing, which is
and really that's yeah, it's exciting. And I'm sure I've told you this before, but the reason why I'm here today is because of seeing you at the Winnipeg Folk Festival. The first time I went there, I had no interest in folk music whatsoever. I just kind of got dragged there by some friends,
right on.
And I saw you, and I went, "What have I been missing?" And
wow.
It kind of set me down this road. So it's certainly going to be exciting to see you back there.
Yeah,
and
I'm really looking forward to it. And, so thank you for having me.
Certainly exciting to have you here. It's an honor for sure.
I hope people can make it down on Saturday night without plugging too hard. But the more the merrier.
And don't listen, but always one of the best live performers, honestly, out there is Stephen Fearing for sure. So Saturday night, West End Cultural Center. And who knows when the next time will be another chance. I mean, it's been a few years since he did the solo thing.
It has been a long time.
So go and check it out. Of course, Blackie coming back on March the 5th, I believe, at the West End. That's going to be fun as well.
With the new suits.
All right.
So you can't miss that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fearing.
Pleasure. Thank you.